Just get back from my...
We're holding on to Zion Amud Aleph, top line. We're still continuing on the topic of whether when Bishama and Bishilol argued about this matter of Tsaras Erva and various other cases where they argued in Halacha, given that Bishama were the minority, did they actually follow their opinions in practice? Or did they not? Did they just hold that the Halacha should be this way, but they didn't actually do that? So we went through a lot of possible proofs. We had a couple of proofs that seemed to say that they did. In fact, but we didn't necessarily have anything definitive. So now here's another one. Tashma, the mayor of Joseph ben Hurkinas Hutra Tsaras Abbas Lachen. In the times of Reb Joseph ben Hurkinas, the Tsaras Abbas, which is this case of Tsaras Erva, was allowed to marry the brothers. Now, allowed means more than just that they said that it's allowed. It means Hutra implies that it was actually in practice done that way. Shmamina Asu. So that shows that Bishamai actually followed their opinions in practice before the Halacha was eventually established exclusively like the civil. Shmamina. So that proves it, that there was a period of time when Bishamai actually followed their opinions in practice. So now the Gemara is going to go into that story in detail. Gufa. So that in his times they had done that, they were matir it. There came out an official psak halacha that the tzoras abbas is allowed to marry the brothers, like the shammai, not like the civil. We're having a hard time with that. What should we do about it? On the one, Reb Joseph ben Hurkinas is a great chacham, and if people are saying in his name that this is allowed, then many people are likely to follow that. The ain of Kumu Mulov Lebesa Medrash. Meanwhile, Rab Joseph ben Hurkinas's eyes were no longer working. The ain of Kumu was, you have this a similar expression, it says by Eli Akoyan, that he went blind or mostly blind, so he couldn't come to the Beis Medrash anymore. Meaning, if he came to the Beis Medrash, he would have heard the arguments against this opinion and he might have changed his mind. But like this, now he can't come to the Beis Medrash anymore, then he has no idea, maybe, of the arguments that the Chachamim brought to bear against that. So therefore, what are we going to do? How do we demonstrate to him and to everybody that this is not, that most of the Chachamim disagree with this? We said, after all, Beis Hillel disagrees with it, and they're the majority, and therefore that we should, and therefore that he shouldn't pask in that way for the public. So Omer Umi Yelech, it's really Omru Umi Yelech. They said, so the Chachamim said, who should go to him? We're going to have people go to Reb Joseph ben Hurkinas' house and talk to him about it. So who should go? So the idea, and inform him of what's going on in the Beis Medrash. Omer Lehen Rabbi Yeshua Ani Yelech. So Rabbi Yeshua says, I'll be the first one to go. We learned yesterday that Rabbi Yeshua, they had asked him whether the halacha is like this Shammai or like this Hillel. And he said, I'm afraid to get involved over here. So he gave them a very broad hint that the halacha is like Beis Hillel, but he didn't want to say so explicitly. But he is also the Av Beis Din. So he decided that he'll be the first one to go. Then the Acher of me, who should be next after him, who's next in rank after Rabbi Yeshua? The next one is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Where Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a miyuchas, the Gemara mentions in Brachas in the famous story of him being appointed a nasi, that he was the 10th generation from Ezra, and he himself became the nasi at some point, so therefore he's the next one to go. The achra of me, and who should be third in rank? Rabbi Akiva. So those three chachamim were going to go in that order, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Akiva. Where there was the idea, in other words, so that's the order that they go in. Rabbi Yeshua was much older than them. He, after all, was one of the five Talmidim of Rabbi Yechonman Zakkai, whereas Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was relatively young. We know he was only 18 when he was appointed Nasi, and that was a few years after the Churban. So that means he was much younger than Rabbi Yeshua. So therefore, he goes second, even though he's the Nasi. And Rabbi Akiva, third of all, because Rabbi Akiva is neither Nasi nor Av Beis Din, and he doesn't have any particular yichus either. His father, as we know, was a ger. So that's the order they went. So they went and stood by the door of Rab Joseph ben Hurkinas' house. His maidservant, Rab Joseph's maidservant, came into the room. She says, Rebbe, the chachamim of the Jewish people have come to visit you. Amalei Yikansu. So he's sure. So he tells her, let him come, let him in. V'nichmasu, and they came in. So the first, now, apparently Rav Dosa was maybe not completely blind. When we said Einav Kamu, it doesn't mean that he was completely blind. He couldn't see very well, but he could see enough when people are close to him. So Tuf say that Rabbi Yeshua, first he took hold of Rabbi Yeshua out of respect. And he had him sit on a golden bed out of respect. He knows Rabbi Yeshua from a long time already. As we said, Rabbi Yeshua was a Talmud of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Dosa ben Hilkinas knew very well who he was. So as soon as he saw him, he grasped him and had him sit on a golden bed. Amalei, so then Rabbi Yeshua tells him, Rebbe, emor l'tamidcha achav yeshiv, please invite another Talmud of yours to sit down as well. Amalei mihu, and Rabbi Dosa ben Hilkinas asked, who is this next one that you're talking about? Again, he didn't recognize him. And he tells him, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Omar, so Rabbi Dosa ben Hilkinas was very impressed. He says, V'yeshle ben la'azariah chavireinu. Really, does our son Azariah have a son that's such a distinguished Talmud Chacham? This Azariah, now we find actually, we know that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah himself was very rich. The Gemara mentions in Shabbos and in Beitza that he had hundreds of thousands of head of cattle, for example. There's a Mishnah at the beginning of Zvachim where it mentions Shimon Achi, it mentions the opinion of Shimon Achi Azariah as far as a detail about the Korbanos, about Shaloi Lishma, about Lishma, Shaloi Lishma, whatever. Who is Shimon Achi Azariah? So this is a famous thing that this Shimon and Azariah had a Yisachar Zvulun partnership between them. Shimon learned Torah. Azariah, his brother, supported him in learning Torah. And then he got part of the schar of Shimon's Torah. And therefore, that's why Shimon is distinguished in the Mishnah as Achi Azariah, the brother of Azariah, because Azariah is the one who helped him learn Torah. So now Rabbi Dosa ben Hilkinas is saying that Azariah, I guess by that point, had already passed away. So I'm very happy to hear, says Rabbi Dosa, that our son, that our friend Azariah, that rich Gvir, the Zvulun, who helped his brother learn Torah, now also has a son of who's such a high caliber Talmud Chacham. Kora Olam Mikra Azeh. So in fact, Rabbi Dosa ben Hilkinas applied to him the pasuk. Nar ha'yisi gam zakanti. I've been young. I've also become old. V'lo ra'isi tzadik nezav. I've never seen a tzadik abandon v'zarem v'vakash lochem, that his descendants should have to be searching for bread. So in other words, the idea is that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah has inherited riches from his father Azariah. But also, in other words, the point is that I never saw that you often have that a tzaddik has children who also are tzaddikim like him, and so it is with Azariah that he has a son who's worthy of his father, and his father is worthy of him, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So he grasped hold of him and had him sit on a golden bed also out of respect. Then he, either Rabbi Yeshua or Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, says, Rebbe, emor l'tamidcha achav yeshiv, please invite another Talmud of yours to sit down. Now, they're not all Talmudim of Rabbi Dosa ben Hilkinas in the sense they didn't necessarily learn Torah by him. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, for example, the pastors didn't. Otherwise, Rabbi Dosa would have recognized him. They're calling them Talmudim out of respect, because Rabbi Dosa ben Hilkinas was extremely old, and we'll see soon how old he was. And therefore, they're calling all of these three chachamim, his talmidim, out of respect, because they're much younger than him. Anyway, so Rabbi Yeshua or Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, please invite another talmid of yours to sit down. Amalei, so Rabbi Dosa says, Umihu, who is this that you're asking? Who is this that you want me to invite to sit? And they tell him, Akiva ben Yosef. Amalei, so Rabbi Dosa is very impressed. After who, Akiva ben Yosef? You're the famous Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef, Shashimcha Holech, Misofa Olam Bad Sofa. Your name goes from one end of the world to the other. So in other words, even though Rabbi Dosa had maybe never met Rabbi Akiva in person before, or at least not enough times to be able to recognize him, but still he knew of his name because his name is constantly being quoted in the Beis Medrash in words of Torah. So he says, shave, Bani, shave, sit, my son, sit. Kamos Chayuv of Yisrael, may there be many more like you among the Jewish people. Which means, my Rosh Hashanah says, he's saying that your father was a Ger Tzedek. We know famously that Rabbi Akiva was descended from Sisra. So he's saying, halavai, there should be many more like you from the actual Jewish people themselves, rather than people of your caliber having to come from Geirim. So that's why he said Kamos Chayur b'Yisrael. There's an interesting vort that's brought on this. One of the Mefarshim in the back of the Gemara called Mitzvah Eson points out that the words Misofa Olam Va'ad Sofa have the gematria of 564, and that is the same as the number of times that Rabbi Akiva is mentioned in all of Shas. Now, of course, Shas was not composed yet in the form that we have it in Rabbi Dosa ben Hilkiah's times. He was a Tana, but still, the point is, in other words, Min HaShemayim, it came out that way, that it's exactly the number of times as the gematria of Rabbi Dosa's phrase, Misofa Olam Va'ad Sofa. Anyway, so now that all three of them are seated, they started discussing with him various halachas. Now, they had come to discuss this question of Tzoras Habas, but Maharsha says they didn't want to jump into it right away because what happened? We said before that when we learned yesterday that when they asked Rabbi Yeshua to weigh in on that, he said, Misyara ani, I'm afraid to take a stand on it one way or the other. So if they ask Rabbi Joseph ben Hokina straight out, he might give the same answer. So instead, they decided to discuss various other halachas, and eventually they'll steer the conversation towards Tzoras Habas, and maybe then he won't be so afraid to, in case before he was afraid to give a position about it, maybe now he won't be. Achi gil at Tzoras Habas, until eventually they reached the discussion about Tzoras Habas. Omrulay, so they asked him, Tzoras Habas mahu, what is the din about this case of a Tzora of an Erva, for example, where Shimon is married to Reuben's daughter? Omerland, machlokas v'shamay v'sivol. So he tells them, well, you know it's a machlokas. And they ask him, halacha k'divrini. So who is the halacha like? Omerland, halacha k'v'sivol. The halacha is like v'sivol, as usual. Omrulay, so they said, v'halem shimcha omru halacha k'v'shamay. Didn't they say in your name that the halacha is like v'shamay? How come you're changing your mind? So he asked them, let me ask you what exactly you heard. Doisa Shmaitim or Ben Harkinas Shmaitim? Did you hear that it was Rab Doisa Ben Harkinas who was Matirit, or did you just hear that Ben Harkinas was Matirit? Because there's more than one Ben Harkinas. Omrulay, so they said to him, Chaye Rebbe, we swear by Rebbe's life, Stam Shamainu. We heard it Stam. We heard that Ben Harkinas was Matirit, and we figured, who else is Ben Harkinas among the Chachamim? You. Omrulahem, so he tells them, Och Katan Yeshli. I have a younger brother who's also a son of Harkinas. Bechor Satan. He is a Bechor Satan. Now there's many different explanations what that means. And literally, Bechor Satan means the firstborn of Satan, but what kind of a word is that to use about his own brother? So Rashi says it means he's very sharp. He sticks to what he learned and follows it in practice in halacha. So even though we had the whole discussion in the Gemara before whether Bes Shammai would actually follow their opinions in halacha, so Rav Dosa is telling them, my brother Yonason, this brother of mine, as he's going to say, his name is Yonason, is not like that. He figures that the halacha is a certain way. He's going to do it no matter what. And just because the rabbim are against him, he's not going to change his mind so easily. So in that sense, that's why it's calling him Bechor Satan, in the sense like he'll stand up. Satan doesn't mean only the Satan, as in the Yetzirah or the Malchamavis. It means more generally an adversary, an opponent. So you should know he's a tough opponent. He's going to be a tough nut to crack. There's many, many other different explanations of this expression, Bechor Satan. One of them, actually, Tosfos Yeshanim, says that it doesn't mean bechor, as in the word bechor. It means the beis is a prefix, and kur is the word that it's attached to. So bechor satan would mean that my brother lives in a place called kur satan. And then there's a in Ein Yaakov, instead of satan, it says over there shon nun, because the test can be broken up into a nun and a vav. So either it could mean, so it means, I guess, that the Mechaber of Ein Yaakov had in front of him a Ksav Yad that had that. So it could be either way. It could be originally the word was Shon Nun, which means sharp, and then at some point some copyist accidentally combined the Nun and the Vav together to make Satan, or vice versa, that there was a test over there and somebody mistakenly saw it as a Nun and a Vav. So that's another possible thing, that he's not saying Bechor Satan, but rather Bechor Shon Nun. He's a Bechor and he's sharp.
Can I ask you the just Misofa Olam Ad Sofo, that is gematria of how many times the Rabbi Akiva is mentioned in Shas?
Yes, that's what the Mitzvah says. Yeah. Yeah. So getting back to
the Mitzvah says that.
The Mitzvah Eisan in the back of the Gemara says that.
The Mitzvah Eisan. Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Okay, so Bechor Satan. So again, so there is a girsa in Ein Yaakov that it's not Satan but Shonnun, which means short. And in fact, Maratz Chai says in that case, maybe the first word is not Bechor with a Chof, but rather it's supposed to be Bechor with a Ches. So it would be Bechor Shonnun, a short Bechor. Yet another explanation, there's one of the Gaonim named Tzemach who wrote a dictionary of the Gemara. We don't have it, or we don't have it anymore, although there are quotations of it here and there in other Sfarim of the Gaonim and the Rishonim. Anyway, he says Bechor Satan can also mean someone who is a Bechor from his mother, but not his father. So in other words, the idea would be that this Yonason is a half-brother of Rav Dosa ben Hyrcanus, same father, so he's also ben Hyrcanus, different mother, and therefore, so Rav Dosa is informing them who he is. Anyway, the Yonason Shmo, so he tells them his name is Yonason. So when you heard ben Hyrcanus was Maturit, it wasn't me, it was my brother. Now you should know that this brother of mine, Yonason, is one of the Talmidim of Shammai. And he warns the Chachamim, be careful that he doesn't cut you off in halacha. In other words, if you get involved with him in a discussion of halacha, then he's going to end up, he may end up beating you. He's a very sharp guy, and he knows what he's talking about. He has 300 proofs that Saras Abbas is mutter. Now, 300 sometimes is used as a guzma, but still, it means he had a lot of them, which, when you think of it, it shows how much details of Torah Sheba'al Peh haven't come down to us, because at the beginning of the Suvya, in the Mishnah on Yud Gimel, on Daf Yud Gimel, we had Beis Shammai's opinion, and then in the Gemara afterward, on Yud Gimel Amud Beis, the Gemara discussed why Beis Shammai holds as they do, and we brought two reasons, one based on a pasuk, and one based on what Rava says over there about Ein Isur Chalal Isur. But now we see that this Yonason ben Hyrcanus has, even if we say not 300, but he has dozens or hundreds of other reasons for Beis Shammai's opinion, and we have no idea what they are. So it goes to show how much, whenever we find something in the Gemara, that the reason for this Takana, or this Gzeira, or this opinion is such and such, we should realize that those reasons that the Gemara is giving are really only ketipim and ayam. They're only like a drop in the bucket of what's available, because we see over here that there are so many other reasons that he could bring to bear. Anyway, so therefore, so he tells them, so the psach came from my brother, not from me. Be careful if you get involved with him in halachas, he in discussing this halacha, he might well convince you to join his side, because he has a lot of strong proofs for his position, and he doesn't back down very easily. So Avol, but he continues, made ani alai shamayim va'aretz, I can bring heaven and earth to witness on me, sha'al meducha zu yoshav Chagai HaNavi, that on this mortar, and he points to a mortar in his house, Chagai HaNavi sat, which is generations earlier, because Chagai was at the beginning of the second Mishmikdash, va'omar, and he said, shloisha dvarim tzara sabas asura, and he said three things, three halachas, which I'm going to tell you over now. Number one, Saras Abbas Asura, this halacha, that Saras Abbas is also like this hero. So even though as many proofs as my brother Yonason can bring you to the contrary, you should know that Chagai HaNavi hundreds of years ago said that the halacha is not like that. Now, as a Navi, he has no right to do that. But all of the Nevi'im were also the great Talmid Chachamim of their times. Chagai was one of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. So in that capacity, as a Talmid Chacham, he has the right to say what the halacha is. And therefore, Rav Dosa says, you should know that he said that. Number two, I'll tell you two other halachas that he said. Amun Amoyav Ma'asrin Masa Oni Bashvigas. Number two, the countries of Jews who have farms in the countries of Amun and Moyav, they have to take Maisa Oni during Shvigas. Now, we learned this at the beginning of Chagiga, namely like this. These are areas that, as the Gemara is going to discuss soon, these are areas that do not have the full Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi explains, we're talking about that these are the lands that were conquered by Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jewish people and parceled out to Reuben and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. But in the time of the second Mishnah Mikdash, they don't have the same degree of Kedusha, and therefore they don't have to keep Shemitah there. So instead, they're farming their fields during Shemitah, because it doesn't have the full Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. So now the Chachamim were debating what kind of Meiser do they give that year? Do they give Meiser Sheni and Meiser Oni? Or do they give Maisa Oni? So Reb Doi says, informing them that Chagai had said that you give that Chagai Anovi had said you give Maisa Oni. We had at the beginning of Chagiga that there was a machlokas between the Chachamim about that, and eventually they decided that it should be Maisa Oni. And in fact, in the Gemara over there, Rabbi Yeshua says to his Talmidim, when he finds out about that, that you should know we have a tradition all the way back to much earlier Nevi'im, that in fact that's the case. So that's the second halacha. And number three, umakabim gerim in a kaudurium in a Talmudim, the third halacha, Rabbi Doisa says that Chagai said was that you can accept gerim from kaudurium and Talmudim, which are the Gemara's the next piece of Gemara, beginning a few lines further down, is going to discuss what the point of that is. That even though there might be reason to suspect that in those places there are actually mamzerim, and therefore then they can be niskaya, but they wouldn't be able to, even so they wouldn't be able to freely marry into the Jewish people. So he's saying that it's not that's not the case, and you are allowed to accept gerim from there just like from any other goyim anywhere else in the world. Why is he mentioning these three halachas? Well, of course, these are the three that he's saying that Chagai said, but the Aruch HaNer actually points out an interesting thing. He says each one of them is addressed to a different one of the Chachamim. The first one about Saras Abbas is addressed to Rabbi Yeshua. We said before that Rabbi Yeshua was afraid to decide whether the halacha is like the Sivul Bais Shammai. So Rabbi Doi says, telling him, you don't need to be afraid. You should know that Chagai HaNavi said hundreds of years ago that the halacha is like the Sivul. Number two, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was the one who held in that debate about Maisa Sheni versus Maisa Oni in Amun Umayyav. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah held that it should be Maisa Sheni. So Rabbi Doi says, informing him, you should know, Chagai HaNavi said it's Maisa Oni. And the third one is that Rabbi Akiva holds, as we're going to discuss in the Sugya, and as we're going to see later on in the Masechta, that when you have a union between people where there's an issur lav, we've talked about it previously in our perek, where there's an issur lav, Rabbi Akiva holds that the children are considered mamzerim, so which would include the case where we're going to discuss soon. The problem with Taudu and Talmud is that there may be goyish men there who had relations with Jewish women. So according to Rabbi Akiva, the children are mamzerim. So Rabbi Doi says, telling him, you should know that you're allowed to accept gerim from there because they're considered regular goyim and not mamzerim, just like all other goyim in the world. So each one of them is addressed to a different one of the chacham. Now, when we say, now what do we mean? Did Rabbi Doi ben Hyrkinas actually see Chagai HaNavi? Chagai lived hundreds of years earlier. So in fact, the Rambam says, yes, the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos learns that Reb Doisa was actually that old. He was around at the beginning of the second Mishnah Mikdash, he says, in the times of Shimon HaTzadik, and he was still around in the time of Rabbi Akiva, 400 years later. On the other hand, the Rashbats, one of the later Rishonim, says in his Pirush on Pirkei Avos that maybe it was the other way around. Maybe Chagai lived much longer than we usually think, and he was still around closer to the times of Rabbi Akiva. On the other hand, there's a tshuva from Rabbi Shmuel Goin where they asked him this question, and he's 200 years before the Rambam and 400 years before the Rashbats, and he says, no, of course not. Rabbi Doisa is not saying that I saw. One thing we should also mention in this regard is the Yerushalmi says that when Rabbi Doisa saw Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and they told him, this is our friend Azariah's son, he was very impressed, and he said, you know what, I recognize that he really is descended from Ezra. His eyes resemble Ezra's, which makes it sound like he actually saw Ezra in the flesh. But on the other hand, anyway, Rav Shmuel Goin was asked about this, and he says, no, all Gemara doesn't say that Rav Doisa said, I saw Chagai sitting on this Meducha. What it means is he had a reliable tradition that's how it was. And he explains that, you know what, you can have, for example, he says, in our yeshiva, He says we can quote exactly and precisely what so-and-so said, where he was sitting, and exactly the conversation that went on in the yeshiva in the times of. And he mentions goyim that were about 150 years before him. So it can happen eventually. He says people tend to forget the little details like that, where so-and-so sat and what the conversation was, and they just remember the halacha that he said. But within 100 to 200 years, you can remember accurately even those little details like that. So Rav Dosa is saying that I have a reliable tradition that's come down to me over the several hundred years that Chagai actually sat on this meducha and said these halachas, but not that he saw him in person. Anyway, when we say that one of these halachas is Amun u'Moav, so again, Rashi says we're talking about over here the areas that were conquered from Sichon and Og, and originally they had the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, but after Churban Bayis Rishon, those places lost their Kedusha, and as the Gemara is going to say soon, when they were Mekadesh Eretz Yisrael, again, at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, they were not Mekadesh those areas with the full Kedusha of Shvi'is, with the full Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, therefore you don't have to keep Shemitah over there, therefore instead the Chachamim said that you should give Maisa Oni over there, as we're going to say soon, so the Aniyim have where to go and eat during Shemitah. Because after all, in Eretz Yisrael itself, all the fields are fallow, and there's no Leket Shitcha and Peah, so therefore the Chachamim said that Amon and Moav, these countries of Evra Yagin, being near Eretz Yisrael, they should be giving Maisa Oni for that reason. Tosfos over here and in other places in Shas discusses this at some length, and says that here we're talking about the areas of Amun and Moab that were never conquered by Sichon and Og, and therefore were never conquered by the Jewish people. So then we're saying, so they don't have the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael at all. But we're saying because they're close to Eretz Yisrael, the Chachamim made a takana that they should be giving Trumas and Maisris. However, they don't have to keep Shemitah. And it would be the same idea as there's a Mishnah in Yadayim in this connection that mentions that in Mitzrayim and in Babel also they have to give Trumas and Maisris to Rabbanon, and of course those areas were never part of Eretz Yisrael. So Tosfos discusses that whole point at some length. So continues the story. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Kshenichnesu. Now when all these Chachamim had come in, into Rav Dosa's house, nichnasu b'pesach echad. They had all come in through one door, one after the other. Kishin yotzu was shloish p'sachim. When they went out, they left by three different doors. Now, why did they do that? Tosfos brings two possibilities. One is they didn't want, before Rav Dosa had warned them that if you meet up with my brother Yonason, he may yikapeach eschem b'halachos, he's going to cut you off at the knees as far as halachas. In other words, he's going to demonstrate that his opinion is correct, that Saras Abbas is mutter and yours are wrong, and they didn't want that. So therefore, to avoid him, according to that, they went out by different doors so he doesn't find them all together. Even if he meets up with one of them and manages to convince him, the other two are still the majority and they're entitled to continue maintaining their opinion that it's osur, and they have Rav Dosa to back them up. That's one explanation in Tosfos. Because, in other words, if he manages to talk all three of them into it, they're going to have to say the halacha is like him, despite the fact that Chagai HaNavi had said otherwise, and they don't want to do that. Or the other possibility that Tosfos says is the other way around. They went out by three different doors, Davka, in order to find him. They didn't want to miss him. They want to hear. You're saying he has 300 explanations, he has hundreds of explanations, why Tzoras Abbas is mutter. We want to hear what those explanations are. And then Marusha says a third possibility. The Nasi should go before the Abbasin. When they came in the order in which Rav Dosa recognized them. We said before, he already knew Rabbi Yeshua from long ago, then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, then Rabbi Akiva. At least Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, he knew his father, Azariah. Rabbi Akiva, he didn't know anybody from his family at all. So they had to come in that order. But now when they're leaving, it's not right that the Av Beis Din of Yeshua should go out before the Nasi, and it's also not right, on the other hand, that we should be flipping around the order. So therefore, they went out in different doors, so that way we don't have the problem of who precedes who. Anyway, Poga Boy Rabbi Akiva. Sure enough, this Yonason Ben Harkinas met up with Rabbi Akiva. Yonason started asking Rabbi Akiva all kinds of questions on his position that Saras Abbas is also, and Rabbi Akiva was able to answer them. Omaloi, so at the end of the discussion, Rabbi Yonasan says to him, he says the same as his brother, Rabbi Dosa said, are you the Rabbi Akiva, that your name, that your fame goes from one end of the world to the other? Ashrecha shezachisa l'shem, how happy are you, how fortunate are you, that you've been zoicha to such a great name among the Jewish people? But you should know, v'adayin lahigata l'royei boker, you haven't even reached the level of cattle herders yet. And Rabbi Akiva says not even to the level of shepherds, where shepherds are considered in halacha on a lower level than cattle herders, because it's very common that they have their sheep graze in other people's fields, and in fact in halacha they're considered to be often suspect as far as matters of edus and whatever. So on the simple sense, in other words, Yonason is putting Rabbi Akiva down and saying, as great as you are, you're still not even on the level of Roy Boker. And Rabbi Akiva is not taking the bait. And he's saying, you know what, I'm not even on the level of Roy Tzon. But there are different explanations on this. How could Yonason say such a thing? Since when do you put down somebody like that? One interesting point Marsha says is that Yonason is telling him, you know, you're saying from what you heard from my brother Rav Dosa that you have a Kabbalah going back to the Novi Chagai, that Saras Abbas is also. But you should know, there were earlier Nevi'im than Chagai. For example, there was Amos, who describes himself in the Pasuk as a cattle herder. He himself wasn't actually a cattle herder. The Medrash says he was rich. He owned a lot of cattle. But the point is, the Pasuk describes him as Boker. He also, though, he had a speech defect, and the Medrash tells us. And therefore, so Yonason is telling him, you know what, listen, you don't have, your Masoda extends as far as Chagai, but your Masoda does not necessarily extend as far as the Nevi'im of the first Beis Hamikdash, for example, Amos. And maybe what it is Amos didn't speak clearly. Maybe he said something which people misunderstood what he said because he had a speech defect and thought that he was saying Saras Abbas is Osir. And from that, Chagai eventually learned that. And from that is where you're getting your idea. But maybe it's all based on a mistake. And Rabbi Akiva answers him in his own coin. He says, you know what? All of us get our Masoda from the Roy Yitzhak, Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe also had a speech defect. You're certainly not going to say that because of that, what we learned from Moshe may have mistakes in it, chas v'shalom. So by the same token, don't think that our Masodas come through Amos, and therefore they may have a mistake in them. No, absolutely not. What we're saying is crystal clear. So that's that. So that's the end of that story. So it was established that Rav Dosa had not been the one to be matir Saras Abbas. It was his brother, Rav Yonason. And fine, the Chachamim weren't so worried about that because, first, they have, on the contrary, they have Rav Dosa, the elder Talmid Chacham, on their side. So this way, people are less likely to follow the opinion of Yonason. And so let Yonason have his opinion. Let him have his 300 proofs. As long as he hasn't refuted them, they can still keep the halacha the way it is. Okay, so now let's analyze what we said. Rav Dosa had said that Chagai taught three halachas, and the second one we said was Amun Umoy of Ma'asri Ma'asa Oni B'Shvius. So let's analyze that. There are many cities in Eretz Yisrael that the Jewish people conquered when they first came from Mitzrayim and entered Eretz Yisrael in the times of Yeshua. V'loy Kovshu Olei Bovel, which the Yidden were not Makadish those cities. They did not resettle, and they did not resettle those cities. Well, like Kovshu or the bubble, they didn't conquer, because there was no conquest at that time, but they didn't take them over and resettle in them when they came from bubble. Now, the original Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael was only for its time. It ended with the Churban Bayis Rishon when the land was conquered by the Goyim. So it wasn't La'asid Lavoi. So therefore, when they came for the second Beis Hamikdash, they had to be Mekadesh Eretz Yisrael again. Well, they were not Mekadesh the entire area that had been Eretz Yisrael in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. The Hinichum, so they left these places alone. Kadesh Yismuchu Alein, Aniyim Bashvias, so that poor people can rely on them doing Shemitah. Because again, doing Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael proper, nobody's working their field. So there's no leket, shitcha, peya, there's no maiser oni, there's no nothing. So instead you have these areas that used to be part of Eretz Yisrael and aren't anymore. They don't have the full kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. So midrabanan, They take the midrabbanan, they take trumas and maizrus over there, and they also, but they don't have to keep shmita there. Instead, they harvest their field normally, and they give maizr on it. That was the point of the takana. So again, Rashi says we're talking about the lands that used to be the lands of Sichon and Oig, and then were the lands of Reuben, Gad, Chatzi Shevet, Menasheh. And Tosfos says that we may be talking about areas even outside that, the areas that always remained part of Moab and Ammon, but nowadays, in the times of the second Mishnah Mikdash, you have Jews living in those areas. Okay, so that's the idea. There's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about a deeper idea behind that. Reuben, Gad, Chatzi Shevet, Menasheh, and the land of theirs in Eivor HaYarden represents the chokhmah of Torah. The aniyim represents those who lack the chokhmah of Torah. Ein oni ela bedas. So therefore, we're saying that they are soimich. The poor people are soimich on the land, according to Rashi, that we're talking about the lands of Reuben and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menasheh. The poor people are soimich on them, that on a deeper level, it means that's how they're able to achieve knowledge of Torah, is through connecting with those shvatim and the chokhmah of Torah that they represent. Okay, so now let's turn to the third din that Reb Joseph ben Hilkinah said. So the Gemara says, "Eini, is that so?" Well, Tani Rami by Yecheskel, "Ein makabrim gerim min akaduyim." Rami by Yecheskel taught a braisa that you're not allowed to accept gerim from the kaduyim. So how can you say that? And then the Gemara is going to explain later, because there are mamzerim who are mixed up among the population over there, and therefore any person, so all the people over there are living as goyim, but some of them are really Jews who are mamzerim, who've forgotten that they're Jews, and therefore, if you accept them as a ger, then it turns out he's really a mamzer, and you're introducing mamzerim into the Jewish people. So therefore, so he says you're not. So how can Rav Joseph ben Hilkinah say that you could? So Rav Ashi says, Rami by Yechezkel's braisa is not talking about kauduyim with a dalid, but rather kauduyim with a tuf. As in fact, people have a popular expression, kauduyim that are apostles. So those are the ones, they have mamzerim mixed in among them, because the Gemara is going to discuss later that you have the in these places, there were goyim, there were goyish men who had relations with Jewish women, and the children, according to this opinion, are mamzerim. The halacha is not like that, but right now we're talking according to the opinion that it is. So therefore they'd be mamzerim, and therefore you can't accept gerim from them, but that's in kautuyim, not in kauduyim with a dalet. Another version is Tony Rami by Yecheskel ain makabum gerim mina kautuyim. Another version is that Rami by Yecheskel says that you can't accept gerim from kautuyim. So the second version is that his braisa clearly said kautuyim with a tough. My lab hainu kautuyim hainu kauduyim. Wouldn't we assume that that's the same as kauduyim with a dalid? And Omar Abashi loy kautuyim lachud, but kauduyim lachud kedamni inchi kautuyim psili. No, they're actually two different places or two different nations, and therefore what applies to one doesn't apply to the other. So either way, Rami by Yecheskel's braisa doesn't contradict what Reb Joseph ben Hilkinah said in the name of Chagai. Now, what? So that's as far as the kautuyim or the kauduyim. What about as far as the Talmudim? So we said that Reb Joseph quoted in the name of Chagai that you are allowed to accept gerim from them. On the other hand, says the Gemara, Reb Yechanan was Savaya da Amitavayu, Reb Yechanan and the elder Talmud HaChacham of his times both said, Ein makabim gerim in Talmudim. We cannot accept gerim from them. Now, what does that mean? How can Reb Yechanan and Amora argue with Reb Joseph and Hilkinah Satana? So Tosfos at the top of the next Amud says that, what it is Reb Yechanan hold that in fact Chagai did not say that. So he doesn't accept the edus of Reb Joseph ben Hilkinah that Chagai in fact said that. I suppose that might work out better according to the opinion, according to Reb Shura Gaon, that we said that Chagai himself, that Reb Joseph ben Hilkinah himself never saw Chagai. It's only that he had a reliable tradition to that effect. So Reb Yechanan is saying, you know what, maybe the tradition is not so reliable as Reb Joseph thought. If we say, according to the Rambam and according to the Rashbats, that Reb Joseph actually saw Chagai, then it would be a lot harder to understand how Reb Yechanan could hold that we don't hold like that. So Reb Yechanan is saying that you can't accept gerim from Talmud. So the Gemara asked to me, Omer Reb Yechanan, Hachi, did Reb Yechanan really say that? Well, Hoknan, we learn in a Mishnah, Kolak somim aboyimin arekim tohorim. All blood stains, so all garments that you find blood stains on them that come from Rekem, Tahorim, they are Tahor, because in Rekem is a place where mostly Goyim live, And now, midaraisa, goyim are not metame the nida at all. Midaraisa, the whole concept of tumah v'tahara applies only to Jews. Midrabanan, we do say that goyim are considered the men like zogim and the women like nidis. However, that doesn't apply to blood stains of theirs that we find on clothing, because even by Jews, the whole concept that a blood stain is metame and that it makes the woman tame is only derabanan. Daraisa, we would say that only if she actually felt it coming out, as the Gemara talks about extensively in the Masechta Megillah. So therefore, even by Jews, the whole concept of ksamim is only derabanan. So therefore, they didn't apply it to goyim at all. So when you have, if you have a piece of clothing that comes from rechem with a blood stain on it, and even though, as Tosfos points out, there are Jews who live there, but most of the people who live there are goyim, and therefore you don't have to worry about it. Tosfos also adds that Jews would know, because these bloodstains are metame, they would be careful to hide away such clothing. They wouldn't keep it out in the open where other people could get a hold of it. Whereas the goyim wouldn't care about that. So therefore, if you find a bloodstained garment from rechem, either it's from, most likely on both grounds, it's from a goy, because the majority of people living there are goyim, and because the goyim are careless about these things, whereas any Jews who live there would be careful. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda metame, Rabbi Yehuda says that the blood stains and that the garments would be tame, mipnei shehem gerim betoyim, because the people over there are gerim, who they're Jews, so therefore, like any other Jew, the blood of a nidya is metame, but v'toyim, but they made a mistake, and they shmadzeh, they abandoned their gerus, and became, and went and reverted to being goyim. But nevertheless, obviously that doesn't work, once a yid, always a yid, so therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, they may be acting and living like goyim, but they're really gerim, and therefore their blood is metame. If the clothing with blood stains on it comes from a place where goyim live, then Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it's tahor. Only in rechem, he says, the people over there, you think they're goyim, but they're really Jew, they're really gerim who reverted to acting like goyim. Vahavinan ba. Now, when we learn that Mishnah in Nida, then we ask about it. Kaposik v'tani. The Mishnah is saying a blanket statement, mibena ovdei kechavim, that the blood stains that come from goyim are tahor, implying va'afilu min Talmud. So that would apply even from Talmud. So therefore, that means that the people in Talmud, there's no possibility that they're Jews. There's no possibility that they're like the people of Rechem, Jews who are now living as goyim. For Amr Rabbi Yechanan, zayseimeres mekabim goyim mitalmud. And Rabbi Yechanan says that shows that you are allowed to accept Gerim from there. We're not worried that some of them may be Jews who are Mamzerim. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying before that you can't accept Gerim from Talmud. He all of a sudden is saying that the implication of that Mishnah is that you could. Now you might argue maybe what Rabbi Yochanan means is the Mishnah is implying that, but Rabbi Yochanan himself disagrees with that concept, and he says that in fact that Talmud would be an exception. But Rabbi Yochanan halacha gestam Mishnah. Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan himself say that the halacha is like a stam mishnah? So if we have a stam mishnah there in Nida that says that anything that comes from a place of goyim is mutter, and it doesn't specify Talmud the way it specified Rechem, then it means that all goyim are in the same category. And Rabbi Yochanan holds halacha the stam mishnah, so therefore he should hold that the goyim of Talmud are real full-fledged goyim, and there's no possibility of there being Jews or mamzerim mixed in among them. And therefore that would mean that you could accept gerim from them. And the answer is amiroyim ninu v'alibe de Rabbi Yochanan. The answer is there are different amiroyim who argue what Rabbi Yochanan said. So it can mean, Tosfos says a couple of possibilities. It can mean that one opinion holds that one opinion holds Rabbi Yochanan does not always hold halacha k'stam mishnah, and the other amora in his name holds that it is. Or another possibility is that one amora in Rabbi Yochanan's name holds that when the mishnah says mibeinu obikachavim tahorim, that mibeinu obikachavim, it means from among the goyim without exception. Whereas the other one would say just because the mishnah says without exception doesn't necessarily mean that it means without exception. Sometimes you can have the mishnah could be saying something and it means in a generic sense, but there are exceptions. So here, one amora could be saying, Rabbi Yochanan means that the Mishnah is saying all goyim without exception, and the other would be saying that no, it means all goyim with certain exceptions, namely Talmud. So, Talmud, my time alone. So, what would be the problem with Talmud more than any other place in the world? Pligiba Rabbi Yochanan v'Savaya. So, here, Rabbi Yochanan and the other. So, before we said Rabbi Yochanan and the Savaya all said that you can't accept Gaiden from Talmud. So, now, why is that? What's wrong with Talmud? So, now you have different opinions between Rabbi Yochanan and the Savaya. One says, because you have servants, you have slaves of Shlomo who went over there. So Rashi explains, they were very rich because as servants of Shlomo, naturally they had a certain part of his wealth and paid them generously. So therefore, so because of that, there were certain Jewish women who were attracted to them, even though they shouldn't have been, and they ended up living there. So these Avdei Shloima are still considered goyim. They're avodim knanim. Therefore, their children have the same status. So the children. Therefore, this opinion, we're following the opinion that says that if a goy or an eved has relation to the Bas Yisrael, then the child is considered a mamzer. Now we actually have, by the way, Tosfos and Tosfos Yeshanim point out that there is later on in Or Masechta. You have a Stam Mishnah that says as much, that says that if a goy or an eved has relations with a Bas Yisrael, the child is a mamzer. However, the Stam Mishnah what the Gemara was saying before, Allah, the Stam Mishnah in Nidah is stronger because that's the main place where the Gemara, where the Mishnah is talking about this topic. And the one later on in Or Masechta is more like incidentally, it's talking about incidentally in connection with dinim of when kohenim are allowed and not allowed to eat truma. So therefore, there's more reason to say that the halacha should be like the Stam Mishnah in Nida. But anyway, so one opinion is we're saying that Avdei Shloimo ran away to Talmud and married Jewish women. And if we follow the opinion that if a goy or an eved has relations with Bas Yisrael, the child is a mamzer, then it means that Talmud is full of mamzerim. So they're living as goyim, but they don't realize that in fact they're Jews. And therefore, one opinion would be you can't accept geirim from there because they're actually mamzerim, and then you're going to be introducing mamzerim into the Jewish people. So that's one opinion. The other one says it's because of women from Yerushalayim that the Gemara is going to say that that goyim captured them at the time of the Churban and took them to Talmud and forced them to marry them. So the same idea, in other words, their children are going to be, according to this opinion, are considered mamzerim. So the Gemara says, "Bishleimel amanda omer mishum abdei shleimer." I understand if we're saying that if the problem is abdei shleimer, then we're saying the kasava, because obviously the opinion that says that holds. That if a goy or an eved has relations with a Bas Yisrael, then the child is a mamzer, which is a point that we're going to take up several times in Or Masechta. And we're going to discuss now the halacha is not like that. Maisim b'chol yom, that you have people who are born, unfortunately, from intermarriages and they're considered Jews and they're not mamzerim at all. But there is an opinion that they are mamzerim. So therefore, so fine, the opinion that says you can't accept gerim from Talmud because of Avdei Shloimo would hold that they're mamzerim, and therefore that creates a problem. When you're saying because of women from Yerushalayim, what's the problem? What exactly happened with these women from Yerushalayim that there should create any problem in Talmud? So now, within that opinion, Rabbi Yosef and the Chachamim argue about that. Both of them are saying their statement in the name of Rabbi Baba Chana. One says that from Talmud there were 12,000 soldiers at the time of the Churban, and there were 12,000 foot soldiers plus 6,000 archers. The other one says it was 12,000 soldiers from Talmud, including 6,000 bowmen. Anyway, when the goyim entered the heichal at the time of the Churban, hakol nifnu al kesef hazahav, and the other goyim were looking to try to grab all the gold and silver they could. Behem nifnu al bnos Yerushalayim, these goyim from Talmud went to look for Jewish women that they could capture and that they could rape and so forth. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Noshim b'tzien inu b'sulis ba'ora Yehuda." The pasuk at the end of Eicha says they afflicted, they raped women in Tzion, and noshim means married women, b'sulis means unmarried girls, ba'ora Yehuda in the rest of the cities of Yehuda. So we're saying it wasn't all the goyim who did that. It was specifically the goyim from Talmud who did that. So therefore, they brought these women with them to Talmud. And therefore, again, you have the same problem that the fathers are goyim and the mothers are Jews. And according to, and we're following the same opinion that says that that such children are considered mamzerim. So that would be the idea. There is, by the way, there's the famous thing in connection with Hanukkah. You have the famous thing that we light the menorah and we keep it burning ad the kalya rigla the tamudoi until the tamudoi stops.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, so the Tamudoi stopped going around the street. So there are a number of places in Sichas and in Maimorim where a connection is made between that and the Talmudim of our Gemara. The Rebbe often talks about the idea that brought from earlier Sforim, that Talmud Oisius Meredes, it means it's a rebellious place, they rebel against Hashem. In fact, the Yerushalmi, when it mentions this point about the Talmudim, says that they assisted, we're saying over here in the Gemara, they assisted in the Churban. There were units of soldiers over there by the Churban. The Yerushalmi says both by the Churban Bayis Rishon and Churban Bayis Sheni, which, by the way, also is tremendously ungrateful of them because the Psukim in Sefer Melachim say that Shlomo was originally the one who built up Tadmor, which is another name for Talmud, as a big prosperous city. So they owe their prosperity to Shlomo. So Hayitochen, now they're going and destroying the Bais Mikdash that he and his descendants built. But anyway, so Talmud Oisius Meredes, and therefore the idea is they're the rebellious ones against Hashem. Therefore, we're saying in our Gemara over here, they have no place in the Jewish people. And we're saying, therefore, that on the other hand, the Ner Hanukkah has the power to destroy that Meredes, to overcome and to destroy that rebelliousness against Hashem. There's even in Plaka, the fact that there's even in fact a place in a footnote to a Sicha in Chelek Gimel, where it ever makes the point, you look at it, all Gemara is saying that these are servants of Shlomo, which means as much as Shlomo was rich and powerful and ruled the whole world, etc., you had Avodim of his who decided they don't want to be under him anymore, and they rebelled and ran away to Talmud. And now we're saying that the Ner Hanukkah has the power to kalya rigla the Talmudoi, it has the power to completely remove their feet, to completely remove their stability from the world altogether. But until that happens, we're saying that the Talmudim, according to what we're saying in our Gemara over here, are the ones who are rebelling against the Likus, and they don't belong among the Jewish people. So that's that. Now, since we quoted before, when Reb Dosi ben Harkinas first saw Reb Elazar ben Azariah, he said on the pasuk Nar Ha'isi Gam Zakanti that he was very impressed that Azariah, the great Gvir who supported Talmud Chachamim, that he now had a son of the caliber of Reb Elazar ben Azariah. So now the Gemara brings another drasha on that pasuk Nar Ha'isi Gam Zakanti. Omer Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni, Omer Reb Yenison, pasuk Zeh Sar Ha'olam Omrei. This pasuk was said by the Sar HaOlam. The Sar HaOlam, Rashi just says, the Malach. Tosfos discusses, is this Malach Matat? And who is Malach Matat? Is he a Malach that exists since the creation of the world? Or is it Chanoich, the great-grandfather of Noach, who went up to Shemayim at a relatively young age and became a Malach? And then Tosfos discusses the ins and outs of that. There are actually some places in Sifrei Kabbalah, where it actually associates this Malach with Eliezer Eved Avraham. So Sar HaOlam anyway is like the Malach, so to speak, in charge of running things in the whole world. Like all of the Eveshter's Ashpah to the world goes through him. So he says, Nar HaYisi Gam Zakanti. I've been young and I've been old. So Man Amri, we have to ask, who is saying such a phrase? It can't be, the Gemara doesn't even bring up the possibility Elam Akudshabrihu, could it be Hashem? Mi'ik zikne kameh. Hashem never gets old, so how could he say, Gam Zakanti? The El of David Omri, you're going to say maybe David said it, like the rest of children. Mi koshish kolahai. David never reached such an advanced age, he lived to be only 70. So, in other words, Marshall says, what's the point of the passage? You should know, as long as I've lived, I've never seen Sadik Nez of Azarim Vakish Lachim. But if it's David that's saying it, he lives only 70 years. Okay, so when you were 70 years, you never happened to see such a thing. How does that show that such a thing never happens? And again, it can't be Hashem who lives forever, because then he wouldn't be saying Gamzakati. Ela Shmamin Asar HaOlam Omrei. So it means that the Sar HaOlam, the Malach Matat, or whoever, is the one who said it. And so he's saying, as long as I'm existing, which is as long as the world has existed so far, and then I've never seen such a thing. It never happens that Tzadik Nez of Azarim of Akash Lofen. The Alter Rebbe explained, the Alter Rebbe points out in Lakut Torah and Shir HaShirim that what does this mean? What's the Nar HaYisi Gamzakanti? At the beginning of the week, Malach Matat and the world at large are young. Then as the week progresses, it becomes older and older, because you're weighed down more and more by the cares and troubles of the world. But then comes Shabbos, and Shabbos is higher than time, so therefore that resets the clock, and after that you're back to being a Nar again. So therefore every week you're able to say Nar HaYisi Gamzakanti. Okay, so now getting back to what we said about how the Talmudim went after the Jewish women when they captured the Bais Mikdash. So now in a similar vein, Omer of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Omer of Yonason, my dichtiv, a pasuk in Eicha says, Yodei poras tsar al kol machmadeha, that the enemy spread out his hand over all her treasures. So Zeh Ammon and Moab specifically refers to the nations of Ammon and Moab and what role they played when the Bais Mikdash was destroyed. The Shosh and Nichnas, when the Goyim came in, again, most of the Goyim went to try and get the gold and silver, and we said the Talmudim went for the Jewish women. The Ammonim and Moabim were looking for Sifrei Torah to destroy. Amru, because they said Zesh Kosev Boy Lo Yovei Ammonium Moavi the Kal Hashem, the Torah that says in it that an Ammonium Moavi is never allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people, Yisarif Beish, they decided it should be burnt in fire, so they grabbed as many Sifrei Torah as possible and did that. We find throughout Jewish history, the Chachamim tell us many times where the Ammonium and Moavim were extremely insulted by this pasuk, and they would always try whenever possible to destroy it, to expunge it from the Torah. And he was saying they were burning the Torah as a whole in order to get rid of it. So that's what we mean. Yodei poras tsar al kol machmadeha. Machmadeha refers to the Torah, which is the most precious possession of a Yid. So they spread out their hands and destroyed it. And similarly, when it says a few psukim later, Siva Hashem LeYakov Siva Tzarav, Hashem commanded about Yaakov that his enemies will be surrounding him. So the implication is that not only in the times of the Bais Mikdash, but even in Golos, we're always surrounded by our enemies. An example of that is you have the city of Humania and the city of Pumnara in Babel. In Humania, they were Goyim. Rashi says Yevonim Haim, that they were Yevonim, they were Greeks who harassed the Jews in Pumnara, that were there were poor Jews living nearby. The Gemara in Kiddushin actually mentions that the Goyim in Humania were actually descended from the Ammonim. So it connects directly with what we just said, that the Ammonim were after the Sifrei Torah at the time of the Churban, and even hundreds of years later, when there were descendants of theirs in the city of Humania in Babel, they were still harassing and persecuting the Jews, the poor Jews of Pumnara, which is the next town over. So we see that Jews, unfortunately, are always surrounded by their enemies, even in Golos. Even you have a city like Pumnara, which is all Jews, but you have nearby a Goyish city like Humania, where they cause them trouble. So we'll continue tomorrow with a discussion about this matter of we talked about Talmud, and we talked about Rechem, where these are places where it seems that the people there are Goyim, but they might actually be Jews. So the Gemara is going to continue that discussion. We'll continue that tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and finish the Pera.
Can you say more about Nar HaYisi Gamzakanti? What does it say after that? You said, "Lo
Reisi." So it says, the pasuk says, "I've been old. I've been young. I've also become old. The Lo Reisi Tzadik Nezav. I've never seen a tzadik abandoned. Vezare Mevakash Lochem, and his children having to be begging for bread." So in other words, whoever's saying this pasuk, and we're saying over here that the Sara Olam says that you don't find such a thing that a tzaddik should be so abandoned and that its children should be reduced to begging for bread. You don't find such a thing. Hashem protects tzaddikim to that extent that even their children may be poor, but not to the extent of so poor as having to lose their dignity and beg for bread.
Oh,
so we're saying it can't be Hashem. Now Hashem is there throughout the existence of the world and before and after it. But Hashem can't be saying this pasuk because Hashem wouldn't be saying gam zakanti, that I've become old. So you do have, there's a famous thing we find that, for example, Hashem appeared as an old man by Matan Torah, and then as a young warrior by Kriyas Yamzuk. But that's not Hashem becoming young or old. Of course, that's Hashem manifesting Himself to us in various ways. So the words Nara Yisi Gam Zakanti don't really fit Hashem. Yeah. And we're saying, as far as David, sure, he was a nar, sure, he became Zakin, but there wouldn't be a Chiddush if in 70 years, so it so happens in the 70 years that he lived, such a thing never happened. But the world has thousands of other years. Therefore, that's why the Gemara is saying that Sara Olam said it, the Sara Olam being a Malach, he can be getting young and old, and especially as the Alter Rebbe is saying in Lakota Torah, that every week the world and the Sara Olam go through that process of starting out young and becoming old and then rejuvenated on Shabbos. And he's saying that throughout the entire history of the world, you don't have such a thing.
Cool. Thanks.
Welcome. Should I have another one?